on brain health memory screenings and veteran benefits, May 4th at 11 a.m., presented on WBAI in cooperation with the Alzheimer's Foundation of America.
Especially golden age of radio listeners need to tune in to that Alzheimer's special here on WBAI New York. Or is it called the golden age of radio?
I'ma need you to wash your hands, baby. Baby, girl, wash your hands, baby. I'ma need you to wash your hands, darling. Hurry up and sit me, she's calling.
Now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the historic sounds of radio's bygone days. The golden age of radio rides again.
Are you still there?
Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. It's the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Max Schmid. And on tonight's jam-packed program, the next episode in the series of Gunsmoke, episode 3 of Adventures by Morse, The Cobra King Strikes Back, and the most historic example of radio that we could find for May 2nd, the premiere of Jack Benny's radio career from WJZ here in New York. His first broadcast, the Canada Dry program, May 2nd, 1932, coming your way, and as a tribute to Lee Aker, the long-awaited and long-deferred Adventures of Rin Tin Tin. Goodbye, Rusty. We'll see you in the White Buffalo grounds later in the show. But, of course, we begin, as ever, with Gunsmoke, and this one, well, it's not exactly a lost episode, but thanks to Ted Davenport for filling in the holes in some of the other series of Gunsmoke that are out there. This one's called The Bear, and I don't know, do the original discs not survive for this episode? Doesn't seem to be in the... some of the sets, anyway, but from January 16th, 1954, because we never want to miss one, the 91st episode of Gunsmoke, called The Bear. Mike Blocker, a large, good-natured man who is about to be married, but practical jokes abound. Let's see what happens as we hear our weekly episode of Gunsmoke, right now, right here on the Golden Age of Radio.
Gunsmoke. Transcribed earlier today from CBS. Around Dodge City and in the territory out west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Thank you. with Young America, the story of a man who moved with it, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Ahead there, Mr. Dillon. Somebody's gone and left his wagon right out on the prairie.
Oh, there's a man down in front of it, Chester. And it sure looks like his team went off and left him.
What would he be doing out here with a busted wagon and no team?
And I expect he'll be glad to tell us. Come on. Get out.
What? It's Mike Blocker.
Yeah. Hello, Mike.
Hello there.
Well, it's a poor fix for a man to be in the day before his wedding, Mike.
Yeah, sure is. Well, it'll keep me sober, Marshal, and Matilda will appreciate that even if I don't make Dodge tonight.
What happened, Mike? Where's your team?
Oh, Chester, we hit a hole back there and the wiffle tree busted and that team, it just run off like they was glad to get you out of the whole dang thing.
Well, that must have been quite a hole you hit to do this.
No, not much. Look here, Marshal.
Now, the bar's been sawed, haven't too?
Sure. It's them boys again.
What boys?
Them two crazy cowboys I hired on last fall.
Plummer and Webb, you mean?
Yeah. They've been funning me a lot lately.
You mean this is just a joke?
It's what they figured, I guess.
Much of a joke to leave a man stranded on the prairie this way, especially when he's trying to get to town to be married.
Now, this ain't so bad. Just yesterday, they cut the cinch on my saddle. Good thing the bronc got loose and bucked it off before I could get mounted.
I wish I were as even-tempered as you are, Mike.
Well, Marshal, it don't pay to get mad.
No, but it seems to me Plummer and Webb are going a little far with their jokes.
Don't they want you to get married?
I don't know. I never asked them.
Now, where are they now? Oh, they rode into Dodge this morning. Huh? They see me at the wedding. I had to bring the wagon so that I could carry Matilda back to the ranch.
Well, we'll find your team for you. Maybe we can rig up a whiffle tree of some sort. You can buy a new one in Dodge.
Oh, I'd be beholden to you, Marshal.
Ah, you'll get to town in time for a drink yet. We'll ride along with you to see what you do, Mike. Beer, Chester?
Well, no, sir. If you don't mind, Mr. Dillon, I think I'll go on down to the depot. The Santa Fe is about due, and I like to watch it come in.
Oh, well, I'll leave you here, then.
Sure do thank you, though, all the same.
Well, I didn't say that I was buying.
You'd have had to. I'm broke.
Man has to be mighty careful of what he says around you. I'll see you later.
Okay, sir.
Well, he rode in an hour ago, and you already heard about it?
Matilda told me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about you and Matilda.
She's the only lady in this town who is my friend.
Here's your beer.
Oh, thanks, man. You going to the wedding, Kitty?
She insists that I do.
You're pretty close friends, aren't you?
Pretty close, Matt. I guess it's partner because she can talk to me about things you wouldn't even dare mention to her nice friends.
Now, they're no better than you are, Kitty.
Maybe not. But there are more of them in the long run. That makes a difference. What do you want to know about Matilda and me?
Well, I've been wondering if there's any reason why either of those cowboys who work for Mike Blocker wouldn't want that wedding to come off tomorrow.
Plummer and Webb?
Yeah, that's right.
You must have some reason for wondering about it, man.
Well, man's friends always treat him a little rough before he gets married, but these boys have carried it pretty far.
It's jealousy, Matt.
No. Which one?
Plummer. She and Matilda used to see each other once in a while. Till she met Mike and fell in love with him.
Has the plumber threatened her? Or Mike?
He's afraid of Mike in spite of his gentle temper.
Yeah, he should be.
But he told Matilda he'd make as much trouble as he could.
What kind of trouble?
Anything that'll embarrass her, I guess. Like a chivalry, but real unfriendly.
Now, they started their chivalry a little early. They even tried to get Mike crippled up a couple of days ago.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know about that.
Well, nothing came of it, but I sure don't like to see anybody's wedding day spoiled. I think I'll look those two up and have a talk with them.
I swear I've been in every saloon in Dodge, Mr. Dillon. Maybe they ain't in town after all.
Well, we'll try the hotel, Chester.
Why don't you just throw them in jail till the wedding's over?
I'd like to. Now, wait a minute. There they are.
Yes. It's them, all right. I saw Mike over at the Longhorn taking on a few.
Well, even marrying a good woman makes a man nervous, Chester.
Oh, it sure does. Why, just the thought of it, and I want to go live with the Comanche.
Well, you can't let other men do all the marrying.
Why not?
I don't know, Chester, but it's what they say. Hello, plumber.
Hello, Marshal. What's on your mind, Marshal? I've seen you come all the way across the plaza.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the wedding tomorrow.
Oh? You ought to be talking to Mike Blocker. He's the one that's getting married. We ain't, are we, Webb?
No, we ain't. Did you think we were?
All right, that's enough. You're not dealing with Mike Blocker now. You're dealing with me. My temper's a whole lot quicker than his.
No offense, Marshal. Webb didn't mean nothing.
No, I didn't mean nothing.
We're just in kind of good spirits. On account of the wedding and all?
For sure, you know how it is, Marshal.
You call it good spirits to try to get a man hurt 2 days before his wedding?
How?
Cutting the cinch on his saddle.
Oh, Mike told you.
He did.
He didn't seem to mind as much as you do, Mark.
Don't be fooled by that. If Mike ever does get mad, there's going to be trouble. And I'm telling you to leave him alone.
Oh, we ain't going to do nothing. Maybe a little chivalry after the wedding, that's all.
I don't want either one of you anywhere near that wedding.
Oh, now, Marshal, we was invited.
The invitation's off. You understand me?
Oh, but Marshal...
Shut up, Webb. He's the law. We won't go near the wedding if he says so. Oh, sir, we won't go nowhere as near it. That satisfy you, Marshal?
I go up to her room and help her get packed. You should see all the lovely new clothes she has. She's been saving for years.
Yeah, I know. Mike told me. He's real proud.
You're going to wait around to see him off, aren't you?
Yeah, we'll be here. I couldn't get Chester away from that free liquor anyway.
This liquor may be free, but it ain't too sour. I'm on my third glass, and I don't feel a thing.
You don't have enough blood in you to move it around, Chester. That's your trouble.
Well, I'd have plenty of blood if it wasn't for old quacks like you bleeding me every time I get a cold.
I never bled a man in my life, and you know it.
Well, maybe you didn't, but I sure have been bled by other doctors.
Don't blame me if you're fool enough to let them do it. See, you know, Matt, I've always said if people would just stand up for their doctors once in a while, it would improve the whole medical profession.
Well, you may be right, Doc.
Of course I might.
I'm going to go see if that jug is empty yet.
I think Mike's drunk half of it himself.
Take a look around outside while you're at it, huh, Justin?
For Plumber and Webb?
Oh, they haven't showed up yet, but they might be waiting.
All right, sir, I'll do it.
Such a nice wedding, wasn't it, Matt?
Yeah, fine, fine.
I brought some ammonia along in case Mike got too weak to go through it.
His entrance was a little shaky, but he got his color back about the halfway mark.
Matt!
Huh? What's the matter, Kitty?
Matt, it's terrible, that poor girl.
Well, what's happened?
It's her clothes, all her new clothes. Matt, we went to a room to get a pass, and everything's been torn to shreds.
What?
It's a mess. And Matilda's up there crying her heart out.
A plumber, I suppose.
Of course you get it. Who else would? Poor girl.
You better go back to her, Kitty. And, don't tell anybody about it yet.
All right, Matt. Yeah, well, what are you going to do, Matt?
Find Plummer and Webb and lock him up. Mike's pretty drunk, and I got an idea he won't take this joke as easy as he did the other.
The Oasis.
Oh, why?
It's the poorest saloon in town. A thirsty jackass wouldn't stop here to sniff a rain barrel.
Yeah, not if he knew his way around, he wouldn't.
Mm. Look at there. Even the door's busted off.
Yeah, it sure is.
Mr. Dillon, this place is a wreck. Where is everybody?
There's been a fight here, Chester. Oh, there's somebody.
Look at his head. He's laying funny. What? Well, that's Webb.
Yeah. He got his neck broke, Chester.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah, behind the bar there. Maybe a plumber.
No, that's not a plumber.
Hey, get the beer off the bar and throw it on him, Chester.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh. Don't hit me. Don't hit me. I'm the marshal. Nobody's going to hit you. Now, who are you, mister?
Joe. I'm the bartender.
Well, what happened here, Joe?
Why, that was crazy. He's still here, Michael?
No, he's gone. Who was he, Joe?
The fellow that Plum and Webb worked for. Mike something. He was awful mad, Michael. Awful drunk, too.
Where'd Plummer go?
I don't know. I tried to stop it, but they hit me. Knocked me out.
Was anybody else in here?
Just them, and then Mike come in.
Joe Webb's lying on the other side of the bar. He's dead.
Dead?
Yeah. Do you see who killed him?
He pulled a knife on Mike. He was going to use it, too. Somebody killed him, huh?
Was it Mike?
I got hit about that, Marshal. I didn't see no more.
All right, Joe. You do something about Webb there, huh?
Look what they done to my place. It's ruined. Who's going to pay for all this?
I don't know, Joe, but I'll try to find out. I didn't find out, not that night anyway. We looked around the Oasis inside and out, and then I sent Chester down to wait for Mike in case he showed up at Matilda's quiz. So I scouted the town again. But shortly after daybreak, we both gave up and met back at the office.
Miss Kitty was down here, Mr. Dillon. She stayed with Matilda all night.
Oh, good. How's Matilda taking it?
Well, I don't think she cares about her clothes anymore. She's so worried about Mike.
Yeah. You didn't tell her about Webb being killed, did you?
Oh, my goodness, no, sir. I wouldn't do that. She'll find out soon enough, poor thing. What's Mike?
Yeah, Mike. Come to turn myself in, Marshal. Where you been, Mike?
Sleep?
Asleep. Well, where's Plummer?
Oh, I don't know. I was so drunk and so mad, I don't remember much of anything. I think he knocked me on the head while I was finishing off Webb. I know I ain't seen Plummer since. I've just been down to the Oasis. Joe ain't seen him neither.
Well, nobody has, I know. But where were you?
Oh, I was awful drunk, Marshal. I must have got as far as Kelly's stable, crawled into a stall there. At least that's where I woke up this morning.
Well, I'm going to have to lock you up, Mike.
Yeah, that's why I come. Marshal, that was a bad thing they done to Matilda.
Yeah, it was. But you shouldn't have killed anybody for it.
Well, maybe.
Lock him up, Chester.
Yes, sir.
I'll bring back some coffee.
This way, Mike. My, I sure am sorry to have to lock up a man like you, Mike.
If you didn't, Chester, I'd just go find Plummer and kill him.
There you are.
Yeah.
Mr. Dillon will be back directly. Then you can have some coffee.
I don't want nothing. Don't move, Chester.
What? Plummer.
I'll take your gun.
Well, we've been looking everywhere for you.
Are you glad you found me? Morning, Mike.
What are you doing here, Plummer?
I come for you, Mike. I'm going to take you out back and kill you.
It's a good thing you got a gun.
I didn't have a gun last night.
What'd you hit me with then?
Table leg.
Yeah. I should have killed you too.
You didn't kill Webb.
What?
You knocked him out, that's all.
What are you talking about? He's dead, ain't he?
Sure, he's dead. After I hit you with that table leg, I busted his neck with it.
What for?
So they'd hang you for it.
Well, then what are you doing here now? I've already admitted to killing him.
I got to thinking, that's why.
Thinking what?
Well, when Doc gets a look at Webb, he'll know you couldn't have hit him that hard. Anyway, I figured you'd remember about it all.
They'll hang you, Plummer.
Not me. I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to be gone to Texas.
You shoot me, they'll hear you.
I ain't going to shoot you. Less than I have to. I'm going to cut you, Mike. And you won't look very good when Matilda sees you.
Matilda?
We was friends once, Mike. Real good friends. You know the kind.
You and Matilda?
I'll tell you what it was like while I'm cutting your throat. Get out of that cell now.
Chester, I got... Chester. You all right?
It was Plummer, Mr. Dillon. He hit me. I'm okay now.
Well, come on, then.
Someone must let him out.
Let him out. Nothing. He's probably killed him. Let's look out back.
Look, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
He's Plummer.
He's been beat to death.
He sure has.
His gun's missing, but he got that knife into Mike first. He's leaving an easy trail to follow.
He headed for the alley.
It's a wonder you didn't run into him out on the street.
If he got that far. All right, stay back, Chester. I'll go around the corner first.
Yes, sir.
What did you shoot for?
Well, I didn't know it was you, Marshal. Thought maybe Plummer had come through.
Now, Plummer's dead. You're not in very good shape yourself.
He cut me a little before I got to him.
Ain't bad, but I might have killed you.
Thank you for not trying, Marshal.
Well, we better get you up to Doc. He'll dig that bullet out of your arm.
Sure.
By the way, Mike, I saw Doc a few minutes ago. He'd been down looking at Webb. What did you hit him with?
Oh, Plummer killed him. Told me so. He had a table leg, Marshal.
Doc figured something like that.
Well, that was unexpected. We may have to come back to this episode of Gunsmoke once I can see if I have the ending somewhere. But that's apparently where it drops dead. Jay, what a surprise. This is the Golden Age of Radio on WBAI New York. And, Jay, no time for corrective action now, so I guess we'll just move along to the next program and hope if we can find the ending, we'll bring it to you later in the program. Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to the great R. Paul Martin and Pickles of the North and their program Back of the Book, which is heard every Saturday morning at 5 a.m., and he dropped my name and said I should do a tribute to a fellow who had passed away. And by George, we're going to do that right now. We'll follow up a Western with a semi-Western. At least it's in that mode from the Mutual Network. And I suspect, based on the popularity of the TV show, they brought it to radio. Don't know for sure. Rin Tin Tin was around in silent movies. But, when I was a wee young lad, I used to watch Rin Tin Tin on TV. Don't remember much of it. That's how young I was. But there are two extant episodes of a radio version of The Adventures of Rin Tin Tin. And we send this one out to Lee Aker, who passed away last month. Rusty. Rinty's owner, or whatever, the kid who told them what to do. This one from November 27th, 1955, Rin Tin Tin and the White Buffalo. That's our title. So let's give a listen to Rin Tin Tin, the great dog of books, radio, and movies.
The National Biscuit Company presents The Adventures of Rin Tin Tin.
Yo, ready!
Rin Tin Tin, Rin Tin Tin, Rinny, Rinny, Rin Tin Tin, Rin Tin Tin is brought to you by shredded wheat and milk foam too. Rinny and Rusty side by side, loyal, heroic, the regiment's pride. Action, drama, you'll find them in The Thrilling Adventures of Rin Tin Tin.
The National Biscuit Company presents this week's adventure of Rin Tin Tin, entitled Rin Tin Tin and the White Buffalo.
Oh, boy, Mr. Morrow, I just heard some great news.
No kidding. What is it, Rusty?
I heard that every day, more and more kids are eating Nabisco shredded wheat for breakfast. I think that's great. In fact, I think everybody should eat Nabisco shredded wheat.
You're right. That's a good idea, Rusty. There's no better way I know to start the day than with a bowl of delicious Nabisco shredded wheat.
Yep. Not only does Nabisco shredded wheat taste like a million, it's lots of fun to eat. You see, you put a Nabisco shredded wheat biscuit in a bowl of milk, and you have a real raft. Then you put some fruit and sugar on it, and you have it loaded with cargo, ready to sail.
That's right, kids. Like Rusty says, you'll have a raft of fun eating a raft of Nabisco shredded wheat for breakfast. And you get lots of pep and energy, the kind you need to keep up with the other kids.
So everybody start eating Nabisco shredded wheat. Tell Mom that you want Nabisco, the original shredded wheat. Tell her to look for the box with Niagara Falls on the end.
And now, today's adventure of Rin Tin Tin, entitled Rin Tin Tin and the White Buffalo.
Lieutenant Rip Masters speaking, officer of the 101st Cavalry stationed at Fort Apache. We're known as the Fighting Blue Devils. To keep peace in the territory we patrolled, it was necessary for us to sign treaties with the Indians. These treaties were honored and respected by both the white man and the Indian. To help the Indian, we had been given the detail of surveying the territory and setting up certain boundary markers so that the Indians would know what land was theirs and to show the white man which parts of the territory belonged to him. We were at work on this surveying and marking job when we became involved in a very unusual affair. It all began one morning when we were hard at work. The patrol, myself, Rusty, and Rennie.
Okay, Rip.
Hold it, Rusty. Mark it. 38 degrees west, O'Hara.
Got it, sir.
Well, so far so good, huh, Rip?
Got a long ways to go yet, Rusty.
Cut it out, Rip. Can't you see we're busy? Apaches!
Headed this way, Lieutenant.
At ease, men. They're friendly.
How can you tell, sir?
They're Chiricahuas. If they weren't friendly, Rusty, you wouldn't see them at all. Until it was too late.
Gee. I guess you're right, Rip. Looks like they're coming down to powwow.
Uh-huh.
I'm Komowi, son of Socorro, chief of the Chiricahua.
I'm Masters, lieutenant of the 101st Cavalry. We come as friends.
Then why do you lead your warriors into the hunting ground of the Chiricahuas? Your great white chief has said this land is ours.
You speak the truth. This land was granted to your people under the new peace treaty. Let no man change it.
Yet many of your people would change it.
That's why we're here. To mark the boundary so that no white hunter will trespass upon the buffalo of the Chiricahua.
This is why you come?
Yes.
It is good. When the sun leaves the sky, you will come to the camp of Socorro, my father, to feast and to smoke the pipe of peace.
It is agreed. May your father live 100 years.
May you be present at his funeral. Come, we go to slay buffalo for the feasting.
Gee, sir, can I? Can I go, Rip?
Well, we trust the safekeeping of the peace to our friends, the Long Knives. Do the Long Knives trust the safekeeping of this boy to the Chiricahua?
Go along, Rusty.
Thank you, sir. I'll go get my horse.
We will come to the camp of Socorro at sundown.
This small brave will be there.
Okay, let's go.
Come, little brave.
Makes me kind of uncomfortable, sir. Rusty taking off with those Indians.
It'd have all been more uncomfortable if he hadn't. Rusty included. The Chiricahuas are mighty touchy. If I'd refused their offer, they'd have been highly insulted. As it is, their honor binds them to keep him safe.
Down there in the valley, behold the buffalo, little brother.
Gosh, that's a big herd, Komowi.
No, it is small. Once the great buffalo filled the land as far as the eye could see, so many that a man might have walked across this valley on their backs as on a blanket.
Gee, what happened to them all?
The white hunters came to slay the buffalo, kill and kill, till the bones of the buffalo made the desert white in the sun.
But why, Komowi? They couldn't use the meat, not all of it.
Some say the white man kills for sport. Others say to slay the red man's buffalo is but another way to slay the red man.
How do you mean?
The buffalo is more than game to my people, little one. It is food, shelter, and clothing. Our very life. If the buffalo die, the Indian will soon follow. For we cannot live without them.
Gee.
It is best for you to ride no closer. The great buffalo takes much killing. His hide is thick. From it, we make our shields of war, which can turn an arrow or a musket ball.
Then, how do you bring a buffalo down in the first place?
The shot must be true to the heart. Even then, a bull may run a mile before he drops. A wounded bull is dangerous.
Okay, Rennie. We'll stay up here and watch. Be careful, Kamali.
And you, little brother. Come.
Gee, Rennie, we can sure see from up here. Now we can watch Kamali get the buffalo. There he goes, after a big one. Look, Rennie, he's ready in his bow and arrow. Bullseye! Come on, Rennie, we can get down and see the buffalo. Gee, this is tough going, Rennie. Hey, what?
Keep your paws off that buffalo, Redskin.
Golly, four men. Who are they? And with rifles. Quiet, Rennie.
Why do you come here? What do you want of us?
My, my. He big engine talks real good, don't he?
Just like a native. Come up with your hands empty.
Now get this, Apache. For every buffalo you kill, we're killing one engine. A redskin for a buffalo hide.
You are evil men. This land, as far as the river, was granted to my people by the white man.
We got no use for your land. Keep it.
All we want is the buffalo.
No. This is the last of our land. The last of the buffalo. This we must keep or die.
Won't.
Oh!
Stay put. I will make three good engines fast.
Quick, Rennie. Go get Lieutenant Masters. Bring him here. Now. Yo, Rennie.
Get up, Redskin.
You betray your own people who want peace, even as we have wanted it. For the Chiricahua will fight to keep what is ours.
You see what I mean, Keller? Give an Apache your hand, he takes your whole arm.
You see, Chief, somebody made a big mistake when they made that treaty. Paid too big a price just for peace.
A smart man don't make things too easy on his enemies.
But the treaty was made in friendship.
Ah, we're wasting time. You can't talk sense to an engine.
Let's catch up with that herd. Start driving them to the river.
I'll keep an eye on these buzzers so you get a good start. What was that? Are you red devil, you
man? I will take you. Stop me on that herd.
Molly, pick it up. I got the gun.
Good boy. Now give me that gun. This dirty Apache tried to kill me.
Stay put, mister. You started it.
What? Now listen,
kid. You can tell it to Lieutenant Masters. He'll be here in a minute.
I trust this, Lieutenant Masters. We wait. He does not work.
I'll take that gun, Rusty.
Okay, Rick.
What's going on here?
My name's Garth, Lieutenant. I'm swearing out a warrant for this Apache. He attacked me in cold blood.
I saw the whole thing, Rip. It wasn't Kamali's fault. Yeah, and Rennie saw it too, Rip.
All right. Suppose you start over, Mr. Garth.
Hey, what is this? Whose side are you on, soldier?
Whichever side is right. Understand?
He's an engine, ain't he?
Yes, he is.
Well, I'm a white man. That makes me right.
Right or wrong isn't settled by the color of a man's skin, Mr. Garth.
Him and some other man came to take the buffalo, Rip.
Where are the others?
My braves are bringing them back.
Good.
See? My braves come.
They got those other men, Rip.
That's fine.
Those are the ones, all right.
You'll be lucky, all of you, to get out of this with your skins. Trespassing and poaching on a Chiricahua game preserve in deliberate violation of the peace treaty.
Well, we just didn't know, Lieutenant.
Shut up, Keller. Lieutenant, you Indian lovers keep asking for it, don't you? The buffalo hunters have done more to stop the Redskins in a year than the Army's done in 30.
I've heard that theory. It's no good.
When you take a man's living away and back him into a corner, he'll fight. Any man.
Nah.
If I ever see you on Chiricahua hunting ground again, and that goes for the rest of you.
We don't want no trouble, Lieutenant.
Keller, I told you to...
Quiet, you!
Lieutenant, you just get us out of this, that's all.
Come, are we?
Yes, Lieutenant Masters.
If you let these men go in peace, I promise you that they will not return.
Let them go. On your horse, Mr. Garth.
All right.
Remember, you owe your lives to these Indians.
I ain't forgetting what I owe that Kamawi, Lieutenant. That's for real sure.
Garth and his pals were playing a very reckless game. It never pays to defy the United States government. Never. And we were the representatives of Uncle Sam in the West, put there to keep his laws and his treaties. Kamawi showed what great faith and honor he had for our agreements. But something happened that same night, something so awful that the Apaches wanted revenge. Revenge in blood, the blood of the white man. I'll be back to tell you the rest of the story in just a minute.
Say, kids, if you've been wondering how Rusty trains Rennie to do all those tricks, listen carefully. I'm going to let you in on the secret. First of all, keep the lessons short. Secondly, and most important, give him Milkbone Dog Biscuit as a reward. When your dog knows that he's going to get a reward of Milkbone for learning his tricks, well, you just watch how fast he learns. And Milkbone is good for your dog. It gives him the vitamins, minerals, and proteins that he needs for good health. In fact, Milkbone Dog Biscuit is packed with more energy per pound than prime beefsteak. But Milkbone does even more than supply your dog with the nourishment he requires. It gives him the chewing and gnawing exercise he should have for strong teeth and healthy gums without the fear of dangerous bone splinters. So just ask Mom to get Milkbone Dog Biscuits in the famous red and yellow box the next time she goes shopping. It comes in three sizes, small, medium, and large. A size for every dog. All good dogs deserve Milkbone. And now, back to the adventures of Rin Tin Tin.
Lieutenant Rip Masters again. Garth and Keller and the other two men rode away. But there was hate and vengeance in Garth's every action and in his eyes. I had a feeling that we hadn't heard the last of them, but I was hopeful. That night, all of us made our way to the camp of the Chiricahuas. We all gathered around the huge council fire. Once we were settled, the peace pipe was passed to me by Socorro, the chief of the Chiricahuas. I drew the smoke in, and then exhaled the blue smoke into the cool night air. Then I passed on the pipe to Chief Socorro.
We make prayer to Great Spirit that our hearts may never be far apart, no farther apart than our hands are at this council fire.
Amen.
Look at the red devils down there.
Yeah, I see them, Garth.
Having a hot time, ain't they?
Yeah.
But I'll cool them off.
Put that rifle away. You're the one who's got to cool off. Like Phillips and Magruder said, you're pushing this thing too far.
But they know about it. When I was a kid, Apaches killed my folks. No redskins putting his hand on me and live.
Well, he let you go, didn't he? You're still wearing your hair. Quit when you're even.
When I get even, I'll quit.
And I go with Phillips and Magruder. Our business is hunting buffalo, not men.
Then go, Keller. But make sure you keep going. And keep out of my way from now on. Because if there's one color of skin I hate as much as red, it's yellow.
My son has told me much of the courage and wisdom of this small brave.
Corporal Rusty.
May his eyes behold the white buffalo.
White buffalo? Yeah, I've never seen one.
Few men have. Among my people, it is told that when the white buffalo appears, The Great Spirit smiles on you. No man may see him more than once, little brother. And then, only when his need is greatest.
Rip, did you know about the white buffalo?
It's a famous legend, Rusty. Even a song.
A song?
Mm-hmm. I'm not much of a singer, but I think I do remember the words.
Well, go on.
Tell the legend, white friend.
I have heard many stories from an old Indian friend, and this is my favorite, even though it has no end.
Go ahead, Rip.
I have to try to remember the lines.
There's an old Indian legend I was told long ago. It's about a special valley in the White Buffalo.
Thanks, O'Hara. There are few who have seen him, though they've looked high and low. For the trail is long and winding to the White Buffalo. The legend says you'll find him if your heart is brave and true, and you treat all men as brothers, no matter what they do. I have searched for that valley since I started to grow. I won't stop until I find it and the White Buffalo, for I know it's right to find the White Buffalo. To find the White Buffalo.
White brothers, it is good.
What happened? Look out, what was that?
Hey, guys,
get him, Rennie!
I will send for the medicine man, Father.
No, stay with me, my son. I go on a long journey to a better hunting ground. Perhaps I will see him again.
Good hunting, Chief.
Hey, got away, Lieutenant. Where's Garth?
O'Hara, send Quillen back to the post with the supply wagon. Then alert the entire command. The rest of you men mount up. We're going hunting.
Yes, sir.
What about me, sir?
Oh,
this man's dangerous, Rusty. You stay here with Rennie till we get back.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Komawi?
It is for me to find him. It is for my people to punish him.
He's as guilty by our law as he is by yours. Let him answer to his own people.
No. I am the new chief. I will avenge the death of my father.
There's been too much bloodshed between your people and mine for either side to dictate the law. You can't sacrifice the peace for one man.
If the Long Knives choose to fight the Chiricahua because of Garth, then we will fight to the death.
Don't you see? That's what Garth would want. Red man against white. And once the treaty is broken and the wars begin, right or wrong won't matter anymore. And only men like Garth can win.
You speak the truth. We will search for this man together. And you will deliver him to the justice of your own people.
Thank you, Komawi.
But if he is not punished, then the treaty is made of lies. And I will fight a truthful way rather than keep a dishonest peace.
Gosh, Rennie, it's morning already. Sure been gone an awful long time. You think he got away? I guess Rip and Komawi will catch up with him all right. But they should have taken us along. You, anyway. You're the best tracker in the territory. If Garth gets away, Kamaui's gonna be awful mad. The Chiricahuas might even go on the warpath. Then we'd have to fight them, because we're soldiers. We don't want that. I like Komawi. What do we do? Hey, I got it. You want to follow his trail? Well, let me get on my horse. Okay, Rennie. We'll find him. What you got, Rennie? Horseshoe nail. Not from a cavalry horse, either. And Indian ponies don't wear shoes. Hasn't been here long. No rust. We're on the right track, boy. What I understand. We're closer than I thought. We'll go easy from now on. We'll leave my horse back there, Rennie. You better be quiet. Okay, Rennie, where is he? You want us to crawl through the brush? All right, let's go. Golly, there he is. Right below us in that gully. His horse saw us and ran.
What the devil?
Getting to be a habit, ain't it, kid? You covering me with my own gun.
This will be the last time, mister. Rennie, find Masters and Kamali. Bring him here, quick.
Sure you know how to use that gun, Sonny?
There's one way to find out.
I'll think it over. I'm gonna take that chance, kid.
Better not.
No use, kid. I figured it out. All that guff about men being brothers. You really believe that? You wouldn't plug your own brother, now would you?
Don't try it. You can't get far anyway. Your horse ran off and Masters will be here in a minute.
He'll still have to catch me. Unless you put a bullet in my back.
Hey, come back, you!
Saw nothing, little brother.
But he was there. Garth tried to get away and he got caught in a stampede. I almost did too. They were right behind me. Then I fell. And I looked up and I saw him. He was there, if he was. Anyway, I think he was. And when I looked around, the buffalo herd had stopped.
I can't explain it. Never heard of a buffalo stampede stopping for anything.
Who can explain it? If the little one saw him, or if he did not, is of no importance. For his heart is brave and true, as the legend says it must be. And perhaps he has seen the white buffalo. Who can say?
I did, Rennie. I did see him. We'll come back someday.
We will count the days, little brother. Come, braves of Chiricahua.
There they go. Out to their hunting land.
Right, Rusty.
How does that song go, Rip?
The legend says you'll find him if your heart is brave and true. And you treat all men as brothers, no matter what they do.
Gosh.
I have searched for that valley since I started to grow.
I won't stop until I find it. And the white buffalo. Surprise, Mr. Marl.
Hey, Rusty, what have you got there?
It's a present for you. All the cast, Lieutenant Masters, Sergeant O'Hara, myself, we all chipped in to give you this wallet.
Well, gosh, thanks, Rusty.
certainly was nice.
Hey, here comes Rennie with a present.
Well, what do you know? Rennie's given me a box of Milk-Bone dog biscuits.
Oh, Rennie, Mr. Morrow doesn't use Milk-Bone dog biscuits.
Oh, that's okay, Rusty. I've got a dog at my house who'll really appreciate this present. And besides, I know what Rennie meant. He wanted to give me what he thought was the best present in the world. Like all dogs, Rennie loves Milk-Bone dog biscuits.
That's why I always reward Rennie with Milk-Bone.
And don't forget, Milk-Bone dog biscuits is packed with proteins, minerals, and vitamins, and supplies more food energy per pound than prime beefsteak.
So, kids, ask Mom to get your dog Milk-Bone dog biscuits. There's a small size, a medium size, and a large size. There's a size to suit every dog, and your dog will love Milk-Bone dog biscuits.
As soon as Kamaui and his braves were out of sight, we mounted our horses and headed back for Fort Apache. We didn't talk. We just remained quiet with our thoughts. And the words of the song seemed to come back. If your heart is brave and true. Yes, we are all brothers. You know, almost every man has some particularly trying time in his life. And one of our troopers went through such a stage, Corporal Boone. It all began when Boone decided to leave the service and get married. The whole business became quite involved and very exciting. One man in our outfit frowned on the whole affair, one Sergeant O'Hara.
Well, after all, anybody can get married, just anybody.
What's Boone's wife's name?
Louise. And she's not his wife yet. She's his fiancée.
Fiancée?
Yeah, that's a French word. It means a girl who's going to get married.
Do they have a word for a man who's going to get married?
Yeah, but it ain't in French.
Don't forget next Sunday at this same time over this station, another exciting chapter in The Adventures of Ren Tin Tin, presented by the National Biscuit Company, makers of Milk-Bone dog biscuits, and Nabisco, the original shredded wheat. For The Adventures of Ren Tin Tin on television, consult your local paper for time and station. Don Morrow speaking. This program came to you transcribed from New York.
The Adventures of Rin Tin Tin, featuring Lee Aker, one of those child actors that Paul Peterson crusaded about. Basically, when he got too old, they paid him off, and he spent the rest of his life, well, doing other things, and died in poverty on April 1st, 2021. It's interesting to note that the TV show was on the air about a month or two before the radio version started. The TV went on October 1953, and the radio started. Oh, hold on. I got three Wikipedia pages about Rin Tin Tin up here. It's confusing the hell out of me. Okay, the TV began October 1954, the radio began January 1955. Does this make Rin Tin Tin a show that started on television and moved to radio? It's never mentioned in the lists. At any rate, Lee Aker, we salute you. And having done a little research, by the way, about that Gunsmoke episode with no ending, I've checked other sources, and none of them have the last few minutes of the episode. Something I should have caught before the show started, you say. Well, you know, if my evil taskmasters at Yesterday USA didn't demand that I produce next Saturday's show a week in advance, I would have devoted more time to tonight's broadcast, but that's the way it goes in the world of free radio. Speaking of the Yesterday USA show, we have a new venue. It's 920 WON, the Apple on the internet. You can hear the Yesterday USA show now Monday mornings at 8 o'clock. So if you fall asleep with the radio on tonight or listening to BAI's stream, well, you can head over to 920 WON The Apple and hear our May Day broadcast that was on Saturday on Yesterday USA. Exciting news. It's also posted. If you don't want to do any of that, it's already on Mixcloud. So, yeah, we produce three programs a week, we being Max Schmid, using the Imperial We. We've got the Yesterday USA show, Saturday mornings at 11, followed by an encore broadcast from about 10 years earlier. So we have 4 hours on Yesterday USA. We now have this 920 WON, The Apple. I hope I'm saying that right. You know, I've only seen it in print. I don't know if I've ever even tuned into it. But we're there. They demanded. They've been begging me for years to go and let them use my programming. And so I have consented at last. And, of course, we have the Dustbin of History, which is heard right here on WBAI in the Tuesday into Wednesday overnight, featuring lost episodes of Gene Shepherd just about every week. And currently featuring the Hollywood Radio Theater, The Zero Hour, from 1973, hosted by Rod Serling. So we have a separate Facebook page for the Dustbin of History, but we have one Golden Age Radio fan page for all of our shows with that title, and it can be found on Facebook, facebook.com/Max Golden Age. Where we bring you, sometimes in advance, the complete lineup of our programs, as well as illustrations, cast lists, whatnot. And you can interact with your fellow listeners, facebook.com/MaxGoldenAge. Follow it, like it, love it. And stay up to date with what we're up to. Well, what we're up to next is presenting the very first episode of Jack Benny on the Radio. From this day in history, May 2nd, an interesting time to start a program. Jack was hosting the Canada Dry show, and we have it for you. After this episode, there's a gap of about a year before there's another preserved Jack Benny episode, but somehow they managed to capture this one. And we are going to bring it to you now, the very first Jack Benny radio program, May 2nd, 1932, here on the Golden Age of Radio, WBAI, New York.
Canada Dry, the campaign of ginger ales, presents a series of programs to advertise the new made-to-order Canada Dry, which you can now buy by the glass at drugstores and soda fountains. This series will feature George Olson and his music, Miss Ethel Cute, the star of many Broadway successes, and that suave comedian, dry humorist, and famous master of ceremonies, Jack Benny.
Thank you, Mr. Thorgerson. That's pretty good from a man who doesn't even know me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking and making my first appearance on the air professionally. By that I mean I'm finally getting paid, which of course will be a great relief to my creditors. I really don't know why I'm here. I'm supposed to be a sort of a master of ceremonies and tell you all the things that will happen, which would happen anyway. I must introduce the different artists who could easily introduce themselves and also talk about the Canada Dry made to order by the glass, which is a waste of time, as you know all about it. You drink it, like it, and don't want to hear about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, a master of ceremonies is really a fellow who is unemployed and gets paid for it. I think you will like the entertainment arranged for tonight, I hope. Of course, I haven't seen any of the program myself, but I've spoken to the artists individually. They seem to think it's awfully good. The first number will be a selection by George Olson and his orchestra. I think this being our first program together, it is no more than fair that I have you meet Mr. Olson personally. He's really a very charming fellow and one of the few directors who comes to and from his work on roller skates. That's perhaps the silliest thing that I'll say all night, I think. I might add that Mr. Olson is very, very handsome. I told you, George, I'd get that in. But as long as we are both on the air, of course, I won't have to worry about that. Oh, George, come here. I want you to say hello to the folks.
Hello, everybody.
That was George Olson, ladies and gentlemen. He rehearsed that speech all week. You know, this is really all play with George. He doesn't have to work at all. I might say that Mr. Olson is one of the wealthiest conductors in America. You know what I mean. He owns his own car. Of course, the other boys are in debt, too. George, what kind of a car have you?
A Saxon.
A what?
A Saxon.
A Saxon, huh? Well, that was my fault for bringing it up at all. Is it a new one, is it?
Oh, yes, a very late model.
I see. Well, you must have been in this country a long time now, haven't you, Georgia?
Yes. Say, by the way, Jack, what kind of a car have you?
Me? I have a bicycle built for two. I mean, now, you can't go back any further than that, I think. Well, George, I think we ought to get started. What's the first number?
I beg your pardon, mademoiselle. It's a French number, Jack. Do you like French numbers?
Do I? Mon duck, mon duck.
I beg your pardon, mademoiselle. Step in the garden, mademoiselle. I'd like to tell you, mademoiselle. You're wonderful, you're marvelous. In other words, you're swell. It's lovely weather, mademoiselle. Let's get together, mademoiselle. You know I love you. But if you don't parley-boo, I beg your pardon, mademoiselle.
That was swell. And I don't know, you look so important directing that orchestra, you know, with the baton in your hand. I don't know, there's something about all you fellas when you stand there waving that stick in the air. It's thrilling, you know. One thing I'd like to know, George, if the band didn't show up, what would you do with that stick?
Why, I'd throw it away and do what you're doing.
Always kidding. And now, ladies and gentlemen, may I present a young lady who is a star of many New York productions, Miss Ethel Chute. You will remember Miss Chute best in Whoopi, playing opposite Eddie Cantor. Is it all right for me to mention Cantor's name here? Everybody else does. Ethel, come over and say hello.
Oh, hello.
Wasn't that clever? Oh, she does a lot of things like that, you'd be surprised. And Miss Chute is going to sing for her. She has a beautiful voice, too. She has a sort of a nervous soprano. You know what I mean? In fact, last week she had her nose lifted so she could be heard in Philadelphia. And, oh, by the way, here's a little news for you. Might interest you. Miss Chute is really Mrs. George Olson. Although I wouldn't go as far as to say that that's the reason she happens to be on this program. Nevertheless, she's Mrs. George Olson. Such a nice girl, too. I'm surprised that she's married to Olson. And now Miss Chute will sing I Found a $1 Million Baby. I still feel a little Frenchy tonight, Ethel, so it's Mon Ducks to you, too.
Ha, 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 ha.
A popular song, anytime or anywhere at all.
Rain or sunshine, ring of wild.
You never know when it's going to say hello in a very unexpected way.
For example, H.K.
It was a lucky April shower. It was the most convenient door.
He found $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store.
The rain continued for an hour. I hung around for 3 or 4.
Hung around $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store.
She was selling china when she made those eyes.
Eat your fine china until my breath got dry.
And incidentally, if you could run into a shower,
you step aside a cottage door and meet the $1 million baby from the 5 and 10 cent store.
What a charming couple. And, folks, I forgot to mention that Michoté was assisted by Fran Fry. Of course, I'm lucky that I remember anything tonight. You know, folks, all the time Michoté was singing, I kept thinking of my girl. You know, I get so sentimental. I really have a girl. She lives in Newark, New Jersey. You know, the girl I go with when I'm in Newark? She's not what you'd call good-looking, exactly. In fact, she's quite homely, but then she can't stay in the house all the time. I imagine you folks have seen her pictures in different magazines. You know, she poses for the beauty ads entitled Before Taking. And she comes from a very fine family, although her father very often partakes of the forbidden beverage. It's all right for me to mention that, as they have no radio. In fact, her father drank everything in the United States and then went up north to drink Canada Dry. Boy, I'm glad I thought of that, Jill. You know, the one about Canada Dry? I'm really supposed to mention it occasionally. After all, I owe it to my sponsors, and they might be listening in. Seriously, though, do you realize, folks, that if you want a drink of Canada Dry, well, say, just a glass. You don't have to buy it in the bottle. You can walk into any drugstore or soda fountain that has that big sign, Canada Dry, made to order, ask for a glass and get it. I know you always have it in your home in bottles, but isn't it nice to know that you don't have to wait until you get home to drink it? Gee, I thought I did that pretty well for a new salesman, eh? I suppose nobody will drink it now. And now, folks, a very stirring number called I Love a Parade with a vocal refrain by the Messrs. Fran Fry, Bobby Borger, and Bob Wright. Thank you.
stamping of feet. I love every beat I hear of a drum. I love a parade. When I hear a band, I just want to stand and cheer as they come. The sight of a drill will give me a thrill. I thrill at the skill of anything military. I love a parade. A handful of vets, a line of cadets, or any brigade. For I love a parade. I love to see the boys in blue and hear their heavy tread. I used to love that Navy band with Sousa at its head. I love a stirring war parade, but best of all I feel the biggest thrill when college boys come marching down the field.
Love a parade, ladies and gentlemen. The kind of a number that grips and thrills you, gives you that great feeling of patriotism, and makes you glad that you're an American. Personally, it didn't bother me very much because I took a nap while the boys were playing it. Now, folks, in case you've forgotten, this is Jack Benny again. You know, the Canada dry humorist. Say, I thought that was good. The Canada dry humorist. I made that up myself, huh?
It sounds like it.
That witty retort was by George Olsen, ladies and gentlemen, proving again that he is still an orchestra leader. At that, George has a great sense of humor. Say, he told me a story the other day. Do you mind if I tell it, George? I'll give you credit for it, you know. It's really supposed to be true, too. It's about George's uncle, who had been ill for a long time. He had what you call labor poisoning. You know what I mean? He just couldn't stand working. So his doctor finally told him that he would have to get a lot of fresh air, do outside work, but not lift anything heavy. He told him that at no time was he to lift anything heavy. So his uncle got a job as a garbage man in Scotland. Funny, I never heard that one before, but the thing that kills me is Olsen telling a Scotch story. I mean, because George, you know, is no sense lift himself. In fact, he invited me to dinner the other night, much to his own surprise, and he paid the check with a $5 bill that was in his pocket so long that Lincoln's eyes were bloodshot. That's a fact. However, he will now favor us with that very popular song hit called Paradise. After all, why should his orchestra be an exception?
Thank you.
This is George Olson speaking. By this time, I know you're thoroughly bored listening to Jack our master ceremonies and his alleged Canada Dry humor and telling you all about Made to Order Canada Dry. We also have a product to sell. It's music. And may we show you now just how we make music.
Listen, everyone, we're going to show you how we all make music.
Now, first there's Wally. He sure plays some with two little sticks and beats on his drum. And that's how we make music. Now we have the boys with their violin. Their bows go back and forth when they begin. And the drums. Now the trumpets play loud and shrill, but when they get going, they'll give you a thrill. And the violin and the drums. The old trombone slides up and down. When he gets hot, he goes to town. And the trumpets, the violin, and the drums. When you want to shiver, a quiver, or a groan, we call upon the boys with the saxophone. And the trombone, and the trumpet, and the violin, and the drum. Please, please, now, when we want some rhythm, where do we go? Why, it's old Bob Rice with his old banjo. And the saxophone, and the trombone, the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. Oh, the cow is now a little birdie. All right, girl. Now, the next old fella can't be beat. You know him well. It's Piccolo Pete. And the banjo, and the saxophone, the trombone, the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. Okay, Ben Burney, if you like it. That's it. Now, we have the piano for cadences and such. All he needs is a very light touch. And the piccolo, and the banjo, and the saxophone, and the trombone, and the trumpet, and the violin, and the drum. So are you, so are you. Now the old bass fiddle plays way down low. He has to get a derrick to move his bow. And the piano, and the piccolo, and the banjo, and the saxophone, and the trombone, the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. Hey, please. Bass, piano, piccolo, banjo, saxophone, trombone, trumpet, violin. Now that's how we make music.
That was cute, George. I mean, babies will like it anyway. And, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the way these boys make music. Now, if they could only play it. Mr. Olson will now play Come West, Little Girl, Come West. And I'm supposed to sing a chorus of this number. And you know, folks, that 6 months ago, I couldn't sing a note. Really, I could not sing a note. But after taking 3 glasses every day of Canada Dry made-to-order ginger ale, I still am unable to sing and can't even sign a note. So the moral of this is drink that champagne of ginger ale, Canada Dry, and don't worry about signing notes. So for want of a better soloist, Miss Chute will sing, Come West, Little Girl, Come West. I'm going east.
I love to hear a cowboy sing like a cowboy sings when he's blue. Around the campfire on the range when his daily work is through. If I could hear a certain love song, what memories it would bring. I can't forget that love song the cowboys used to sing. The sun will set, the moon will rise, but I want to look in my baby's eyes. Come west, little girl, come west. The breeze will blow, the stars will peep, but I'm too lonesome to go to sleep. Come west, little girl, come west. Oh, don't be pining away, way down east. You know my love here I love the West, it's full of charm, but I rest best in my baby's arms. Come West, little girl, come West. The sun will set, the moon will rise, but I'm gonna look in my baby's eyes. Come West, little girl.
Hello, everybody. This is Kate Smith, or Jack Benny talking. You see how nervous I am? I mean, not so much because I'm broadcasting, but I think all my relatives are listening in, and I don't want them to know that I'm working. Although I have an older brother that I'm quite fond of. I mean, we get along great. We sort of share everything together. I mean, what's mine is his, and what's his is his, you know. This has absolutely nothing to do with Canada Dry made to order. I keep getting entirely off the subject. But don't forget, folks, that you can walk into your neighborhood drugstore, or any drugstore. I mean, after all, I don't care what drugstore you walk into. I'm just the master of ceremonies here, that's all. I mean, if I'm going to have to worry about things like that, you know, I'll have my hands full. But go into any drugstore and order a glass, mind you, not a bottle, but a glass of made-to-order Canada Dry ginger ale and stagger out. Isn't it funny, the things you can buy today in a drugstore? I went in for an aspirin the other day and came out with a new hat. I imagine the next number will be by George Olson. He's about to make his first appearance on this program. In fact, I'm lucky to get in here at all. This is called Drums in My Heart. And boys, try and finish this all together if you can. Ladies and gentlemen, was the last number on our first program on the 2nd of May. Are you sleeping? I hope you'll be with us again Wednesday
In fact, I hope I'll be here Wednesday. George, though, we all hope that we'll be here Wednesday. Well, good night, then.
All aboard, away we go. Get that little lady on the train, boy. All aboard.
Gentlemen, we are concluding the first program in a new series sponsored by Canada Dry. The ginger ale now available made to order at drug stores and soda fountains, as well as in bottles. Canada Dry has presented Jack Benny, Ethel Chupé, and George Olson and his music. The same group of artists will be with you at this time Wednesday evening. Drums in My Heart from Through the Years was played tonight with the special permission of the copyright owners. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
WJZ, New York.
Au contraire, it's WBAI, New York, and from a rather remarkable 89 years ago, Jack Benny's first broadcast. Trying to see now, about a year, trying to see what day that was. Was he on more than once a week? When they say he's back Wednesday, that leads me to believe the show might have been more than once a week. But the internet is failing me as usual, and we don't have time to ponder because we must get to our final portion of the broadcast, which is Chapter 3 of Adventures by Morse. The Cobra King Strikes Back, entitled The Mad King of Angkor. As you recall, we left the expedition in Saigon in the girls' hotel room where a cobra was attacking. Well, let's find out how they fare as we push on into the Cambodian jungle in The Cobra King Strikes Back by Carlton E. Morse.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
Several weeks ago, two groups of Americans boarded a trans-Pacific liner for Cochin China. One party was headed by Dr. Howard Carter, archaeologist, and included his daughter Celia, Professor Ernest LeBrun, medical advisor, Terry Mills, his young assistant, and Tuck Kwan, Cambodian scholar and graduate of the University of California. Dr. Carter's party is on its way into the northern jungles of French Indochina in search of a lost sister city of the famous Angkor Thom. The second party is headed by Captain Bart Friday.
Yes, and also in my party is Skip Turner and my secretary, Patricia Young, and a young Cambodian prisoner, Fen Lo. It was my job to return this Fen Lo from Hawaii to the authorities here at Saigon, charged with murder and plotting against the French Indochina government. But we lost him aboard the ship. He escaped and vanished. I still believe that Taquan of Dr. Carter's party assisted his fellow Cambodian in his Houdini trick. But I have no proof.
Yes. Well, when the ship docked at Saigon, Captain Friday suddenly decided to join the Carter expedition into the jungles. Taquan warned him he must not, that it would be dangerous for himself, for Skip Turner, and especially for his secretary, Patricia. Then Dr. Carter disappeared out of Saigon, just whisked away, leaving a note telling Professor LeBrun and Captain Friday to organize the expedition and bring it north, and he would join the party at the ancient jungle city of Angkor Thom. The night before the expedition is to leave, the two girls, Celia and Patricia, were spending the night together. Out of the darkness and through their open window came first the ringing of bells in the city, then the sound of a chanting voice, and then the hissing of a snake as a giant cobra was tossed into the room. The snake is standing on its tail, swaying rhythmically to the weird chanting coming from the street outside the window. Then suddenly, a wicked animal-like face appears at the window.
The face! The face at the window is climbing in. He's coming in.
I'm going to try to reach the door.
No, you mustn't. Don't get off the bed. The cobra's on the floor.
Oh, we can't just lie here. Is he still at the window?
He's sitting on the windowsill. A little squat man.
Go away. Go away, do you hear?
Wait, I've got a gun under my pillow.
Do you dare shoot him?
Wait and see. Go away or I'll shoot. Get out of here.
He doesn't move.
I'll count three and then look out.
He's moving. He's coming into the room.
Oh, there. Did you see that? Did you see him get out of the window?
Deformed. A little deformed man. Did you hit him?
No, no. I fired over his head.
What did he want? Why pick out our window to climb in?
I don't know. Anyway, that shout ought to rouse somebody in the hotel.
I'm going to get out of here.
Don't you dare put a foot out of this bed while that cobra's in here. He's deadly poison.
Patricia, what's that shooting?
Hey, boss, there's a cobra loose in our room.
Cobra? Are you certain?
Yes, Captain Friday. We saw it in the moonlight. Someone put it in through the window.
The door locked?
Yes.
The key in the lock?
No.
Good. Skip Turner's with me. He'll have it open in a jiffy. Get to work, Skip. All the rest of you people stand back. Did you hear them say there was a cobra loose in there?
Watch out when you open the door. He's a big one and he's angry.
You two girls, don't move from your bed. Skip's got the door open.
Shall I try to shoot it if I see it again?
Put your gun up. You might shoot one of us. We'll take care of the snake.
All right.
I'll throw open the door now. Skip, be ready with your club. I'll use my pistol.
All set.
Good. Turn on the lights. Right there by the door. Good.
There he is, there in the corner.
The lights blinded him.
Hey, good shot, Chief. Right through the neck.
Shut the door, Skip. Keep that crowd out of here.
Oh, gee, boss, some excitement.
Are you girls all right?
Oh, now that I'm over my scare. But talk about your nerve. I'll have to hand it to Patricia.
Well, I'm so scared I can't keep my teeth from chattering.
Hey, what did you shoot at, Patricia? Was it just to rouse us?
No, there was somebody in the window.
Man?
A little deformed man.
Did you hit him?
No, I shot through the window over his head.
Oh, shouldn't have done that. You should have let him have it.
I couldn't shoot a man.
Well, he had it coming. Besides, you'll get a reputation for being a bad shot. Well,
I just couldn't do it.
Hey, Chief, what about this snake?
Bring him over here, Skip. Let's see what he looks like.
I never saw a deader snake. He practically shot his head off.
Hey, look here. There's a paper tied to his tail.
A message?
Or something like that. Here, take a look.
Written in French.
Yeah? Well, that don't do us no good.
Here, may I see it? Captain Friday, it's a warning.
What does it say?
Well, as near as I can translate, it says that this snake is an envoy from the great Cobra King, and that he brings a warning that it'll be fatal for Captain Friday, his secretary, or Skip Turner to enter the realm of the Cobra King.
Fatal, huh? Fatal for this Cobra King guy, maybe. Hey, who is he, anyhow?
There's no such person, Skip. He's the mythological founder of the Khmer civilization. The people who built Angkor and the other cities lost in the jungle to the north.
Well, there was no mythological king that sent that note on the tail of a cobra.
Yeah, that's true. Patricia, I think I'll ship you back to the United States tomorrow. There's a ship leaving for Singapore and Hong Kong early in the afternoon.
Oh, boss, you can't.
Skip and I have got to go through with this mission. We've got to go north with the Carter expedition. But I can't endanger your life. This one night's experience should be enough.
I can go any place that Celia can. I won't be sent home.
But Celia isn't in danger. Her father's party seems to be wanted in the interior. I'm horning in on this at the French government's request. Somebody doesn't want me and Skip. I'll be on the spot all the time. That's the only reason you can't go.
I'm not going back to San Francisco without you and Skip, boss. That's final.
We got a secretary as stubborn as she is cute, looks like, Chief.
Think it over.
I've done my thinking. If it's good enough for my boss, it's good enough for me.
Well, we'll take you as far as Angkor Thom. We make that part of the trip by automobile. That ought to be safe enough.
When do we leave?
We get out of here as fast as Professor LeBrun and I can get things organized.
Well, after this experience, I'm not as fond of Saigon as I was.
We'll be on our way before dawn.
The trip by car from Saigon to Angkor Thom took from 3 o'clock in the morning until mid-afternoon, through groves filled with wild monkeys, and then up into higher country, where the brilliant feathered parrots and parakeets and other tropical winged creatures filled the eye with color and the ears with horrible screeches and squawks.
And then the car swooped down into the low country, the swampland, hot, humid, fetid, where the water was scummed over and stank of dead things. The only living thing heard on this part of the trip was, yes, one single mockingbird. And then slowly the road swept upward. It was still hot, but there was the coolness of altitude in the air as the car came up the tangled jungle plateau. And at 3 p.m, they came to Angkor Wat, the great temple about which the ancient city was built. They went to the only hotel in the place. Dr. Carter had not yet arrived.
But Professor LeBrun, Father said we were to meet him here at Angkor Thom, and he isn't here. He just disappeared.
Oh, don't worry about him, Celia. Dr. Carter has been taking care of himself for a long time now.
This is such a desperate, secretive country. It gives me the shivers just to stand out here in the open this way.
Shivers in this kind of weather. Look at the heat waves quivering about the pinnacles of old Angkor Wat.
Angkor Wat? The most awe-inspiring temple I've ever seen. It reminds me of a haunted palace.
Exactly what it is. A haunted temple, centuries upon centuries old.
It's sinister. But, Professor, is there only one hotel here in Angkor Thom? Isn't there any place else Dad might be?
No, Celia. Only the one little bungalow hotel. Everyone visiting Angkor Wat stays here.
Then we can't do a thing.
Nothing but wait. Undoubtedly, we'll hear from him when he's ready for us to join him.
And what's become of Taquan? He's supposed to be our guide. And yet he left us the minute we arrived, vanished as completely as Dad.
You are a prized little trouble finder, aren't you, Celia?
Well, it's so different than I thought it would be. I thought we'd all camp together and be good friends. But Dad disappears, Taquan's deserted us.
Yes, and here we are scattered all over the map of Cambodia.
And worse than that, everything is wrapped up in mystery and warnings and threats and danger signs.
Ah, here's young Perry Mills now. Hello, Perry. At least our assistant archaeologist is still with us.
Hmm? He's as worried as I am. Did you find out anything, Perry?
Oh, Celia. Professor LeBrun, I've made inquiries at the hotel and from everybody I could get hold of. And as far as I can find out, Dr. Carter has never arrived here.
Oh, is that so, Mills?
Oh, look here, Professor LeBrun. Why be so doggone supercilious? If Dr. Carter's in danger, I want to know it. We'll go back to Saigon as fast as we can and demand a government search for him.
And tell me, how would you get back to Saigon, even if you wanted to go? The motor cars that brought us are probably halfway back there by now.
I'd forgotten that. But look, we can't just stand around.
Oh, be reasonable, Perry. Dr. Carter said he would meet us here in Angkor. He didn't say he'd be here the moment we arrived. Ah, look. The sun is just going down behind the temple.
Massive thing, isn't it? Reminds me of the pyramids. It has that same mountain-like grandeur.
I've never seen the pyramids, but its general artistic ensemble is much more striking than even the Taj Mahal.
Look, there goes the sun. See, the temple's turned from gold to marble color. Oh, lovely. Oh, look at that great cloud of birds.
What a wonderful sight. Just as the sun sank, that great flock of white birds rose out of the forest.
Well, the most vivid thing I've ever had the pleasure of seeing.
Oh, Captain Friday.
I was just talking with a French engineer at the hotel. He tells me that in spite of the fact that they had to actually chop this temple out of the wilderness, there's not the slightest sign of decay.
Incredible.
He says the carvings on the galleries are as perfect as the days they were made.
I can believe it. I can almost hear the ancient priests chanting in the galleries.
And the dancing girls. There were dancing girls, of course.
Hundreds of them. Girls with little silver bells and sparkling tiaras. Canopies of jasper, floors of silver. Beautiful priestesses with strings of rubies about their white throats.
Oh, listen. Why doesn't someone say something? Makes the cold chills run up and down my back just standing here.
It affects us all the same way, Celia. It's the past casting its spell.
Cambodians are afraid of that feeling. They think it's the spell of the Cobra King. They think it's a warning for them to keep out of this part of Cambodia. They link it with the force that originally drove the Khmers out of Angkor and the other great lost cities.
Honestly, did the Khmers just drop everything and leave their cities?
They left everything, Celia. But not until they'd buried all their precious jewels and sacred ornaments.
And is the sacred seven-headed cobra of emerald buried in one of these cities?
Shh, Celia, not so loud.
Hiya. Hi, Chief.
Skip Burson. Hey, Burson.
Patricia's with him. I wonder if they found anything.
Oh, undoubtedly Skipper's 3D clue.
Hi, boss. We discovered something.
What did I tell you?
Boss, Skip and I ran onto the queerest old Englishman you ever saw. Lives down there on the edge of the woods all by himself.
An hermit, eh?
Well, I didn't ask him. But he had a long white beard and watery eyes and long skinny hands.
Yes, you've nosed out an hermit, all right.
So he's a hermit.
Well, what about him?
Got a bunch of information out of him.
Information about what?
Dr. Carter.
About Dad?
Really?
Hey, just a minute. What'd you find out, Skip? Has Dr. Carter been here?
Sure. Great caravan came through last night. Went through like a train of cars.
They left us behind. Father must be a prisoner.
Dr. Carter vanished from Saigon, but promised to meet the rest of his party at the ancient city of Angkor Thom, outpost of civilization on the edge of the Cochin China jungles. He wasn't there when his daughter and the others arrived. And now Skip Turner and Patricia have uncovered news of him.
Sure, I asked the hermit if he'd seen an expedition pass this way toward the north with a white man in it, and he seemed to know all about it.
The funniest expression came into his eyes. He said it was a great caravan and that it went by last night.
Only last night, huh? He didn't beat us here by very much.
What else did he say, Patricia?
Oh, Celia, he said it was like a parade of giant skeletons.
Oh, come now, after all.
Well, that's what he said. He said there were ghostly beings moving in and out among the shadows of the forest, and that there were great wild elephants in the caravan, and tall camels and wild ponies ridden by Khmer slaves, and there were parakeets in bamboo cages, and...
Patricia, do you know what you're talking about?
But, boss, I'm just telling you what he told me.
That's right, Captain, that's what he said. Of course, he was laying it on a little thick. It was probably just an ordinary caravan going north.
But no caravans go north from Angkor Thom. Angkor's on the edge of civilization. There's only wilderness to the north.
Well, he saw something, all right.
Are you certain he saw Dr. Carter in this caravan?
Well, he said the leader was a strange white man. I don't suppose there's very many strange white men in this neck of the woods.
Something screwy about all this.
Well, you can come down and talk with him yourself. His hut is down there under that big banyan tree.
Don't you think we should all go back to the hotel? It's getting dark and...
And you're getting scared.
Well, I don't care. I don't like those long, creepy shadows. Oh, look. What's that?
Hey, well, that's him. That's the bird who told us.
But he's got on a yellow robe now.
That's a Buddhist priest costume.
And he's wearing a crown covered with orchids.
Yeah, jungle's full of wild orchids.
And if I'm not mistaken, he's got a scepter, too. Or is it only a bamboo rod?
Well, let's go to the hotel.
Who do you suppose he is?
The Mad King of Angkor.
No.
What's all this nonsense, LeBrun?
Oh, don't look at me, Captain. It's none of my doing.
Just the same, you seem to know what it's all about.
Quite right.
Then perhaps you'll explain.
I should be delighted. That strange creature you see there is an Englishman, right enough. He lost his mind in the Great War, and he came out here to Cambodia as a result of some fanatical twist of the mentality.
Insane.
The French here cater to his illusions, and the natives submit to his presence out of fear that he may have some mystical claim to the throne of Angkor.
Madman.
I got my information from the French engineer. He wanders about the temples, offering up prayers to these mythical gods. And he sleeps in the shrines or wherever weariness overtakes him.
How perfectly dreadful.
The women of the native villages feed him. They say he accepts all these donations with the dignity of a monarch.
It's getting too dark to see much. Let's go back to the hotel and figure what to do next.
Yeah, and get some fodder. I'm hungry. Mighty good meals you get out here on the edge of nowhere, Chief.
A cigarette, Skip?
Mm-hmm.
Let's sit here on the steps of the hotel for a bit. Tell me that later this evening, the natives are going to hold a torch dance on the elephant terrace at the front of the temple. Might be interesting.
Yeah? You don't say. Some of these Hindu girls, snake dancers?
No, afraid not, Skip. They tell me in the hotel that the native girls of Cambodia aren't much at dancing. And by the way, I hope Patricia and Celia haven't left the hotel.
No, I went to their room.
That's good. You seen LeBrun or young Mills since dinner?
Yeah, they went off together over towards the temple. Said they wanted to get a close-up view of some of the carvings.
A queer time of night to be studying carvings on a temple wall.
Well, they had flashlights. Hey, the nights here are certainly blackouts, ain't they? You'd think we was on the bottom side of a tea kettle.
Hmm. Our Cambodian guide has certainly made himself scarce since we arrived here.
Takwan. I think I caught a glimpse of him just before we went in to dinner down in that grove of... What kind of trees did you call them things?
Banyans.
Oh, yeah, down in that grove of banyans.
What was he doing?
Or nothing that I could see. Just caught a glimpse of him, and then he disappeared in the shadows.
Now, look here, Skip. What do you think about this business?
Not a blooming thing. It's all wild horse meat to me. You and I start to bring a prisoner to Saigon, and he gives us the slip aboard ship. Then we arrive in Saigon, and you suddenly decide to become an explorer and drag us off up here to Angkor with Dr. Carter's party.
Yes, but I explained the reason for that. The French government's afraid of an uprising among the Cambodian natives.
Why?
Because of the supposed finding of the ancient seven-headed emerald cobra.
Oh, shucks, Chief. Ain't nobody gonna get very excited over a statue of a snake.
You don't know the fanaticism of the East, Skip. There'll be plenty of excitement if the sacred cobra's found.
You mean one certain statue?
The one and only emerald cobra.
Now, what's that got to do with us, Captain Friday?
We're representing the French government. We're here to see that there's no such uprising. If necessary, to capture this seven-headed cobra and get it out of the country.
Yeah? Some job.
A dangerous job. You heard what Dr. Carter said.
You mean about the priest following you and sticking a knife in you no matter where you went?
Yes.
That's a lot of hooey.
It's a very well-established fact.
Yeah?
It's been done before.
Well, then what did you take the job on for?
Skip, never before in my career have I let a prisoner escape. That Cambodian killer, Fen Lo, slipped through my fingers, and I don't like it.
Yeah? So that's what's eating you, huh?
I'm going to recapture that fellow, dead or alive, if I spend the rest of my life in Indochina.
Well, what makes you think you'll find him up here in this wilderness?
Two reasons. First, when Taquan brought us the message in Saigon that Dr. Carter had gone on ahead, he also said that I was right about Fen Lo not having committed suicide. Remember that?
Sure. Fen Lo's alive.
Well, that was a subtle challenge sent to me. It indicated that Taquan had been in touch with Fen Lo quite recently. It also meant that Fen Lo defied me to capture him now that he was back on home territory.
Oh, I begin to see.
And the fact that the excitement over the possible return of the Emerald Cobra comes just at the time of the return of Taquan and Fen Lo from the United States leads me to believe that there's a very definite link between those two incidents.
Uh-huh.
So I figure that as long as I can keep within range of Taquan, I won't be very far from the center of excitement. Nor will I be far from the man I want, Fen Lo.
Yeah, but what's going to prevent Taquan from beating it into the jungle and leaving us stranded here in Angkor?
That's exactly what he would do if it wasn't for the Carter party. He's got some sort of understanding with Dr. Carter and Professor Lebrun. He won't desert them. Probably he's sworn to protect them in case of an uprising. Lebrun and Carter were very good to him while he was in the United States, and people of the East are tremendously loyal to their friends.
And we're riding along as excess baggage on this friendship.
Yeah, that's right. It's a most uncomfortable position to be in, Skip. Taquan won't give us any protection if he can get out of it without breaking faith with Dr. Carter and Lebrun.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we ought to take Patricia back into the woods under them conditions.
Oh, bring her along, Captain.
Hen?
I'll vouch for her safety.
Hey, Lebrun, how long you been sticking your ears in on this confab?
Oh, goodness, Mr. Turner. What a tremendous reserve of bellicosity you must have. Always jumping out at people.
Yeah, well, I don't think much of guys with long ears.
Delightfully fresh.
Well, you get the drift, anyway.
Oh, without a doubt.
Never mind, Skip. What was it you said, Professor Lebrun, about my secretary?
I said bring Patricia along on the expedition. She'll be as safe as any of us.
Yeah, but what about Captain Friday here and me?
Oh, I say, Skip, you don't want me to set up a guard around you and the captain, do you?
I can take care of myself, don't you worry. That ain't the idea. What I want to know is this Taquan bird leading Captain Friday and me into a trap?
Look here. I can arrange it so that both of you will be under the same protection as the rest of us.
How?
Well, forget about this business of the French government. Forget about the seven-headed emerald cobra. Forget you ever heard of anyone by the name of Fen Lo. Come along on the expedition as a couple of guests of Dr. Carter. See the sights. Enjoy yourself. Make it a first-class vacation.
My reasons for being in this part of the country seem to have traveled ahead of me.
You had your warning in that cobra incident in Saigon?
My answer is no. I'm here to get Fen Lo. I don't leave without him.
You don't know what you are setting out to do, Captain Friday.
Are you trying to defend that murderer?
According to his lights, he is not a murderer. He was treated unjustly, and he struck to free himself from further injustice.
Justice is not a matter of individual idea, Lebrun. According to law, Fen Lo, a prisoner, killed his captor, a French consul attaché. Therefore, Fen Lo is a murderer.
He is a mighty intelligent young man, Captain Friday. He has a splendid mind. He's a natural-born leader.
You seem to know a great deal about him.
I've met him. I've seen him command men. I like him tremendously.
But he's still a murderer. He's a prisoner who escaped from my hands. He'll return to Saigon, my prisoner, or one of us will return in a casket.
I'm sorry, Captain. There is nothing I can do for you then.
You're not leaving us behind, LeBrun. According to the instructions of Dr. Carter's note, I'm co-leader with you on this expedition now.
Oh, no. You go along all right.
There's nothing more you could do for us. Skip and I look out for ourselves, as long as you promise protection for Patricia.
Your secretary is in absolutely no danger.
And the matter's settled.
There's an old biblical quotation, Captain. It goes something like this. He who lives by the sword shall perish by the sword.
Yeah. Well, it's lucky swords have gone out of fashion then, ain't it?
If I didn't know you to be a pair of brave men, I'd think you the biggest lunatics out of asylums.
Hey, look yonder across that patch of woods. What are all them lights?
The dancers. There's a religious ceremony down on the Elephant Terrace.
Oh, yeah, the chief mentioned it. What kind of lights have they got?
Torches of bamboo, bound in some kind of a leaf and dipped in perfumed oil.
Yeah? Any girls?
If you're thinking of the beautiful dancing girls of the ancient Khmer Empire, you've got a disillusionment ahead of you, Skip. Besides, the dancers tonight are youngsters of 12 or 13. Would you like to take a walk down and watch them?
Yeah. What do you say, Captain?
Oh, that's a good idea.
It isn't much of a walk. It's a quarter of a mile or so.
Looks further than that.
There is a path leading down through the Banyan Grove.
Safe to travel through the woods at night?
You have weapons, haven't you?
Of course. Now, let's go.
Here, I have a flashlight. We are quite safe. Down this way. Just keep on the path. No telling what sort of insect or crawling thing might be lurking in the grass.
Yeah, I hate crawling things.
Well, it's worth taking a chance to see these youngsters perform.
Hey, what sort of costumes do they wear?
Oh, look out, look out, look out. Watch your step. The pathway leads right straight ahead now. I think you'll find this very interesting.
Gosh, what a dark hole.
Ooh, the trees overhanging the path.
Why don't you use the flashlight?
Careful. The path turns here.
LeBrun, what's that?
Well, I'll be a son of a gun. Elephants.
Your hands in the air, if you please.
Uh-oh. Fellow with a gun, Chief.
Don't move. You are surrounded.
Elephants, camels, ponies. Hey, what is this, a circus?
Let's see. Wasn't it the mad king of Angkor who mentioned something about a caravan?
Look, I want an explanation.
Quiet, please. Bind these men and put them on the second elephant.
Well, spank me for a baby. Kidnapped aboard an elephant.
Taquan comes and goes like a gray phantom in a ghostly kingdom. And now Captain Friday, Professor LeBrun, and Skip Turner are the victims of the weirdest kidnapping plot ever conceived. But what's become of Perry Mills and Celia and Patricia? The fourth episode of The Cobra King Strikes Back will come to you next week and is entitled The Temple of the Gorillas. Watch for next week's colorful episode, Temple of Gorillas, brought to you in this newest series of Adventures by Morse.
And indeed, Chapter 4 coming to you next week here on the Golden Age of Radio, along with a complete episode of Gunsmoke next week. And who knows what else. You know, we went through 2 hours without me asking you to make a donation to keep this radio station on the air. If you would like to do that thing, become a member for $25 or more, you can call 212-209-2950. Support the Golden Age of Radio. Tell them it's your favorite program. 212-209-2950. Still no way to figure out if anyone's pledged in weeks past, so thanks if you did. And if you didn't, 212-209-2950. This is Max Schmied, facebook.com/Max.